on time, ladies and gentlemen. Another person that has been given such words, you won't be with us this morning. And I will be chairing this session. I would appeal for maximum constructive participation. And, you know, this work was supposed to have been concluded as of yesterday, when there was a lot of impatience about the Bush impairment. But I don't mean that we got to the quantity. Committee should be our principle, our modus operandi. And I'm not sure, I'm not really kidding, somewhere again, I'm not on the mic from you this morning.
Special, I am expecting Mr. Boy as well. He has indicated that he will be in attendance. I am aware that the member for the DA, Honourable Natasha Martin-Mazzoni, she submitted an apology, but I don't know about the other members. I think the committee section will probably be able in that table to discuss.
Committee section.
Oh, no, apologies.
Okay. Any apologies?
Thank you, Chairperson. We received apologies of Mr. Singh. He'll be attending as political officer at Sunday's meeting. And Dr. Schmuller, you should be attending pension for same meeting. So those are the representatives for the receipt.
Also, on the personal side, there's a few two apologies from the House Secretary, Mr. Nyandi, and also from Mr. Khai.
Okay.
Thank you.
My understanding is, I don't think this applies to the principles as well. In fact, we'll be just checking on that, is that we can proceed as a subcommittee because we don't take final decisions. We can probably proceed, and if we can come to agreement, it would chart the way forward. If we're supposed to do that, then obviously we will just consider the input from this meeting into the next meeting. That's how I understand it. I understand to be correct.
I would also agree, if we don't take decisions, those members are going to continue with the work. And this was also the directive by Ms. Bandekani. It's the time when it comes from the meeting as well. So I think we will do that. Thank you very, very much. Advocate Lela is known to most of you, I suppose. This is the agenda that we will follow. I assume we all have it before us. Do we accept it as a guide for our meeting, or do we have any additions or subtractions to do? Honorable member? Ms. Honorable Kaula?
Let's accept it, but bear in mind that the only side of the envelope is the resisting dilemma. So the eight cases will not be realistic. And on my side, I also have the delegation meeting at 10.
Are you referring to today, Honorable Member?
Yeah.
I'm not sure how current your information is, but this is a message.
From yesterday.
Anyway. If we debate outside the facility. But for now, let's relate, let's focus on what we're doing here. Right? We've had our apologies, agenda. We agree on the agenda, I assume. Ms. Foreman, who from the office for the adoption? You do? Agenda, Mlambo. Thank you very much.
Do you have letters
arising? I will take the minutes as well. Chairperson, I would like three questions. Just give us a few minutes. We can obviously a few minutes. Okay. Okay. Can we define the few? Can we say 10?
Did you want to meet them?
There was only one of the team, that was from Mr. Kenny of the IT, if you know who that is. As a chairperson, Mr. McCarney, has even asked us to verify the membership of the subcommittee, which was done subsequently, and we checked with the leadership of the party. And ensure that the members who are ready to be taken to the having nominated to the subcommittee has all the great things and the action checks. There was consideration of the draft agenda, and you, the person, explained to the committee that later had been sent by the CPOs to release from the finance chairperson to ask the committee to expedite the matter of establishing or preparing draft rules for the establishment of the oversight mechanism in terms of the financial oversight following that. Then there was a discussion on this particular issue. What was done was that draft rules that had been agreed by the previous subcommittee in the fourth parliament, but was not agreed by the JRC of the fourth parliament because in fact they wanted to overhaul the act that were presented to the subcommittee. And it was decided then that those rules were adequate to use as a basis to move forward with providing a mechanism for, in terms of the current, the amended act. And then there was a discussion on several issues. One of the issues that stood out was the fact that most members felt that we must not make clear distinction between the issue of the NCOP and the MA on the committee, and we must remember that one committee that operates in the unit. You see that the viewpoints of the different members reflected there. And those adjustments they proposed have been incorporated into the rules we will look at today. And then you see that the agreement of the committee is then notarized in the minute, not in the minute. And then it was just a brief report on the issues that are before the subcommittee that were referred to us by the Joint Rules Committee. It was agreed that we would start with the issue of the report of the Joint Task Committee on Defence and the Study Committee. And it was agreed that the chairperson would be invited to the meeting, which was done. And then under any further business, the Simba Family proposed that we present a program to the committee for the date for future meetings, just to make it easier for members of the committee to know what would be going on, and we need to adjourn the chair for the same on the day.
Thank you very, very much.
happened is that I like have been raised about this camera before me. I'm not used to it.
That's show business, yeah.
Because we don't have an adequate number of members present, do we have all that?
Let's know to this minute.
Enough, yeah.
Let's know to the minute and we'll adopt when we correct.
Jefferson, I fully agree with you. If we look at the members present here today, and those who were in the meeting, it's only really just less than a handful. So I think it's...
Thank you very much. Can we then... What do we then come for? We can adopt the notes of the minutes, letters around you.
Jefferson, can I just propose that the NSA will just tell us what they have picked up and matters arising so that we can add to that, so that it could work according to the agenda. It would actually help to direct the meeting, I think.
Yes. Thank you very, very much.
That's what I thought. Yeah.
Thank you very, very much. Then we go on to our agenda. Item 5, consideration of draft rules for establishment of oversight mechanisms. Who's keeping that for us?
We discussed it last time, I remember. But there are also members in this meeting who don't have it. And I just feel... Yes, so that my recollection was there would be a reworked copy. What I have before me is the set of minutes, and then Committee Report, National Assembly and National Council of Provinces, 18 October 2012. I really feel that as chairperson, the staff must really support this meeting.
Deliberation on any matter in which that member has a material interest. So that is actually because of your mention act. The chairperson, and the president and parliament came. You'll remember that the discussion in the main was about the court issues and the decision making. Now, what we've done is that the first part of the rule, you'll remember we agreed that where most committees of parliament can meet without quorum, it should agree without standing quorum. At that point, the quorum is only required for decision making. You've now agreed that the Joint Standing Committee may proceed with business if at least one third of the members are present.
Correct.
But it may decide a question only if quorum is present, which is in sense as our current rules, in other words. And then after the session, you remember the discussion went around, but if you take away the component issue in the quorum, how did we ensure that one house does not take decisions on behalf of another house? So remember that issue was around what is the only element that is decided on financial matter on behalf of the NCOP, because it could be a quorum without the NCOP. So it was decided to retain a quorum requirement that a quorum constitutes the majority of the members from each house component of the standing. So to ensure that balance that we achieve in the committee, to ensure that both houses are represented when decisions are taken. So, but then we did bring the unity aspect into the decision, which is Rule 96F. We say a question before the Joint Standing Committee is decided when there's agreement on a question among the majority of its members.
Yeah.
So in other words, in order to take a decision, you must have a quorum, and the quorum consists of members such as they are members of our houses, and that once they're present, when the decision is taken, it's the same majority of all the members present. How the decisions are taken. And so we brought these in line with the discussions and the agreements that were reached at the committee at the last meeting.
I'm not sure about the majority from each house. Are we including that? Are we excluding that?
We're talking about, are you talking about quorum issue? No, that is, we included that. That in order for it to be a quorum, they must each component
must have a majority.
So we've included that is there in a quorum. But then once you come to decision making, so once you establish that there is a majority from each component, when you go to decision making, then the simple question is, are all members agreed? And if there's a majority of members agreeing to the question, then the decision is taken.
The first measure on the second name, this is the composition. It's still from the composition and being four houses, but it doesn't say anything about the numbers. So that is the difference in the first year.
The number of members are decided by the Joint Rules Committee at the start of each parliament. This is very similar to rules, for example, on the Joint Standing Committee of Defence, for example. That number is also determined by at the start of each parliament. The Joint Rules Committee meets and they decide, taking into account the composition of the two houses, and obviously the provider in the Act, you know, about executive authority, all that kind of thing, which it no longer has, they will decide on the composition of this particular committee.
Honorable Chairperson, according to the agenda, I have over not more than five, but the issue that you raised about the joint standing committee on defense composition, maybe it might be discussed.
We were still on 95.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. When
for the example that has been made, mm-hmm. is made about the joint defense. Thank you.
Yeah, I don't
know if
you have
an example.
Yeah. It was an example of a moment where we had an instance where the rules were decided on the
measure. Okay.
Chairperson, thank you. I just wanted to ask a question about Now you get to see chapter 2, at the top of page 2. Yeah. No member may attend a deliberation on a matter in which that member has material interest. Now that is obviously relating to conflict of interest. I just want to understand, should we not have there, and that member must inform the committee accordingly? Because you see, to stay away, to submit an apology, is one thing, to not be in the meeting, where you could have a possible conflict of interest. But to be upfront about it, to say, due to the fact that I will have a conflict of interest on a matter before the committee, I submit my apologies. So that we could just extend that phrase to say no member may attend a deliberation on a matter in which that member has material interest, and such member must inform the chairperson. The chairperson accordingly, or something to that extent. So that you don't just submit an apology, but that you actually declare that you have such an interest. Just how do we do it in other committees? Thank you.
Maybe I can just tell the student that under the new code of ethics, we're already covered in that. That the old rule used to read on the ethical conduct was that a member must declare any personal, private, financial, business interest to that member, or any spouse, children, companion, or business partner that member may have in a matter before a joint committee, committee, or other parliamentary forum of which that member is a member. And withdraw from the proceedings of that committee or forum when that is considered, unless that committee or forum decides that the member's interest is trivial or not relevant. So that issue is covered in the joint rule already, in the code of ethics. So okay. Member has to declare, firstly declare, and withdraw.
Okay.
So unless the committee decides otherwise.
Are you covered?
Yes.
I think I am correct. I think if it is the onus on the member, and that member is not doing it and just staying away from a meeting, then clearly that would be a breach of the code of conduct.
Okay.
Thank you, Chief Whip, and good morning, Honourable members and colleagues. The discussion on 96 chapter 32. So because what it means is that it should be a member who takes the decision whether the interest is material or not. The committee may have to deliberate on that level and determine as to whether that interest is material or not. And if the interest is material, then the committee may say to the member, please, you do not have to say, you do not have to participate in the proceedings of this committee because your interests are material. But the committee may also decide that the interests are not material and allow the member to participate in the proceedings. But what I also see is that the rule also does not only deal with participation, it deals with attending a meeting of a committee. Because a member may still attend but not participate in the proceedings because the member has interest in the subject matter before the committee. But the rule as it reads now prohibits a member from attending a deliberation on the matter in which that member has material interest and not necessarily participating in the proceedings. I hope that I'm not being taken up.
No.
I don't sound taken up. I hope that I don't sound taken up.
I just want to say that the rule on this declaration of the interest does say that the member must withdraw from the proceedings of the committee before the woman is considered, unless the committee decides otherwise.
You see.
The member will be present at the meeting, but when it comes to the item where remember maybe having a material interest on the matter, then the member will have to recuse himself for that item, for that participation in that deliberation is excluded.
Yes, indeed, Honourable Caller, that's what I said. Because there might be other matters which are claimed before the committee on which a member may participate, except for that item that the member has material in support.
Honourable Caller, check. I also don't want to be taken though, but I think the rule as it is from a government's phrase is exactly that. You see, no member may attend a deliberation on a matter. It doesn't say it may, that member may not attend that meeting. Mm. It says on a matter in which that member has a material interest. So I think that is correct. I think we covered as far as that is concerned, because that member does not then absent him or herself from the entire meeting. The member must just raise the issue when the matter is to be discussed, to say, I am sorry, I have to recuse myself, I have a material interest. And then if the committee then so asks, what is the extent, you know, blah, 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 then the committee could decide otherwise. But I think what is important is that we put it in the rule that the member may not participate, so that then we are covered. To make sure that that member then, if such a member has a material interest in a matter and participates, that member is automatically guilty of a breach of the code of conduct.
Now, it has rules on the subject when the person speaks to us that the member will somehow be upfront with his or her personal interest. How does that rule reach?
Because a member must declare any personal, private, financial business interest in that. Yeah. So do you want me to read the whole, just the whole, okay? A member must declare any personal, private, financial, or business interest that that member or any spouse, business companion, or business partner of that member may have in a matter before a joint committee or other parliamentary forum of which that member is a member. And then the second part is then withdrawal from the proceeding.
Yeah.
Unless the commission finds otherwise.
So the declaration is made only with regards to that particular meeting.
Yeah. That matter.
The member declares, I've got this interest about this particular meeting.
Then so for instance, if I'm selling on, then the next item, item 6,
yes.
And I might not be present.
If you're selling the arms.
If I'm selling on.
You may be selling the arms, you may not be having that conscience that tells you that you should be upfront with your business. And then what?
I think what we did here is because we don't have a moral belief. In the end, it is there would be a long ray probably in the office of what the register that would be raised, and then she would probably call the ethics committee chairperson and say that that matter is a contravention of the code of conduct, and such a member will be called to explain before the committee.
Okay, thank you. We can to take care of the situation. Thank you very much.
In the ordinary course of meetings of such members are required to declare the final declaration of interest on the first chair before the committee, if that is the way that the committee wants to go, and that will assist. But I think it also assumes that the members are on the hand, and they will declare whatever the interest in item on the matters that are before the committee.
Absolutely.
Then in the past, what has worked best? Past 20 years, what worked best for this parliament? Okay. What is the institutional memory here? This very idea, we're trying to shake here. I've just said we are so
this member will just come up front and indicate if this person just feels not like doing it. So my question is, what is the experience? What is the understanding?
I can only recall, I don't know if it was a manufacturer, but it's on the air side, as far as I know, we have not, I can remember two instances where there were complaints about a possible conflict of interest. And in both cases, the matter was investigated and it was found that that was not the case. So there were complaints on this from outright, and the other one was by other members of parliament. Because, I mean, you know, the members of parliament watch each other as well. But it was really important in the opposition. So often things are raised also by co-members of the air committee. But as I said, I know of two cases, and both those cases it was proven that there was not a material interaction.
Thank you
very much. Thank you, Chief. I was just struggling to open the Development Act now, but I succeeded. And it appears to me that this is the wording of the Act. No member may attend to that reason. It says here, representation on the oversight mechanism must be in accordance with the joint rules of Parliament, which must provide that no member of Parliament may attend the deliberation on a matter in which that member has a material interest. So it appears to me that this rule comes directly from the Act. It might be that maybe the better clarity might have been participated in the proceedings. I think that there's good enough and that can be done as far as this process. But what it then means is that that it will both unlawful if a member takes or attempts a declaration, it will also be in contravention of the rules. So,
in
yeah, so I think it should be sufficient.
Sorry that I raised this matter.
No. It's a mature speaker. When we think more about it, yeah. Can we then proceed now?
Nothing.
Can I ask them first, we would just like to, if the subcommittee agrees that this is what we want to do, the next step would be to present it to the Joint Rules Committee for agreement, but I would also just like us to just divine from the Secretary of Parliament as well, since he will be very closely involved with the process. And he's not really involved in the drafting of it, so I would like us to just say that we will also just put those rules, so this will also send us across the secretary and fire him to the design officers for to put on the agenda of the JRC. That is okay.
Let's hear advocate to the honorable Kaula first.
Madam Chair, I just wanted to check earlier when we were talking about the issue of decisions, deliberations and decisions, and the numbers we need for decisions. If this one is not a decision going forward, we have to bring this matter back again at the next meeting before a decision take it forward, taken, or can we decide to take it forward?
Jefferson, you see, I don't think it is a decision to bring it back. And the reason is subcommittees are meant for deliberation to fine-tune documentation that serves before the joint rules. So I think with the extra caveat that we will first take it to the Secretary of Parliament and into the presiding officers before it is submitted, because in the joint rules there would be some further work that is done. So I think if we amongst ourselves agree that this would suffice in terms of, you know, taking the process forward, at least then there's a box that we can tick. Now it's going to go into the sphere of the Joint Rules Committee. So I would like to propose that we do that. Thank you
indeed. I support that proposal, and I shall make sure, honourable members, that the Secretary has right of the proposed rules, and he may also have any submissions made in so far as the proposed joint rules are concerned, and that he also makes sure that the presiding officials do have sight of the proposed joint rules before adding the proposed joint rules to before they go to different rose committee.
Thank you very much.
Looks like we have done on the show.
Yeah.
Consideration of the report of the standing committee on defense.
Proposal by Honorable Darane of the meeting of the 11th of the Shelter Committee the Joint Committee on Defense and Constitutional Review be invited for the next presentation and understanding of the one Shelter Committee. So I think we're on the right track because they need to take us through the presentation.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. I'm not the one who's supposed to give the presentation. I'm invited into the meeting. So can I be invited too to listen to the
we don't want to put you on the spot.
I am on the spot right now. Honorable
okay, thank you very much. Who's working as a group? You do that. Thank you very much. Over to you, ma'am.
Okay, sorry for having the meeting, but I happen to have been involved with the Joint Planning Committee on the thing for quite a number of years. I think
the better
part of 2 days, I think we've been working on the issue. We also have Kevin, Mr. Daniel, who's the researcher for the Joint Planning Committee on the thing. That's a bit later. Oh, you're the PC. Okay, sorry, for Paris and the Joint Planning. And then there's also one of the researchers for you for the Joint Planning Committee on the thing. I've worked with Peter for a long time. I've known him as a new person that I got to know a year or two ago. I can't remember exactly when. Basically, what it boils down to is that there was time when, in the previous parliament particularly, where the Joint Planning Committee on the thing really tackled the question.
Yeah.
One of the main reasons was the fact that that committee is created in terms of the interim constitution, which was subsequently taken up in the rules, and that provision determined that all parties in the National Assembly with more than 10 members are entitled to be represented on this committee. So the composition of this party is actually of this committee. In terms of the interim constitution, it's actually along party lines. Although it is a joint committee, it's along party lines. And that will explain to you the composition that we proposed at the start of the first parliament for this particular committee. But basically what happened, for example, and then there was a formula prescribed according to which you would then determine the membership. Now, there was a further rule in the Joint Rules Committee which elaborated on that formula. And if you apply all of that, the membership of the Joint Standing Commission for the fourth parliament would have been 67 members. Which, as we all know, is an unworkable committee. I mean, in our parliament, there are so many committees. It's such a huge committee. And that's just why the committee was not functioning optimally, because they really had to find a quorum. You know, it's already difficult to join committee to meet given the difference of team members, etc. It's just that kind of story. So what then eventually happened, the other problem that existed was that there is quite a large overlap between the functions and tasks of the portfolio and select committee and the joint study committee on the thing. Basically, if you look at what the Indian Constitution states as the task of the Joint Standing Committee on Defence, it basically really exactly the same as the function of the two House committees we have. So, over a few years now, there have been several meetings, and I think we've now reached a position where there's been a proposal for a delineation of functions between the Joint Standing Committee on Defence and the two House committees. And I think a simple sort of explanation of that would be that the Joint Standing Committee on Defence would take a more strategic kind of of view of all defence matters. I'll tell you what the report, what the committee eventually decided, and I've given you a copy of what the current, the Fifth Parliament committee at a workshop in October, November last year. Agreed would be the way in which they were ending our discussion of the mandates of the committee, how they would operate. And so basically, the broad approach is that the Joint Standing Committee on Defence takes a strategic kind of approach to defence matters. The two House committees, they work on the operations of the defence. Of the table belongs to talking. I mean, I think it's very broad, but I'm saying I'll come to the detail in a moment. So they look at budgets and oversight and those kinds of things, although they also look at function in terms of certain issues for joint standards. For example, the joint committee does not do legislation, for example. That is done by the two top committees.
What is the House
committee? I'm talking about the select committee and the portfolio committee. The defense committee is attached to the two houses.
Yeah.
So it's an ex-committee and portfolio committee. Okay. So basically, I've given you a presentation that was made to the Joint Standing Committee on Defense on two occasions. One was at a workshop in Austin in the Fourth Parliament, and one was done at an earlier point. And things have been moved. Basically, our one problem was resolved at the beginning of the Fifth Parliament. The Joint Rules Committee adopted a new rule on the composition, on the membership of the committee, which says that the Joint Standing Committee consists of a number of Assembly and Council members that the Joint Rules Committee may determine. So at the start of each Parliament, the Joint Rules Committee gets to then exercise the size of the Joint Standing Committee on the day. It is subject, as I said, to the provision of the Indian Constitution, which in the first place describes that parties with 10 or more members in the MA are entitled to membership on this committee, and then there's a formula according to which it's prescribed. So the Joint Rules Committee will take that into account when it determines the membership of that committee. I think at the moment it's 30 members, 8 from the MA and 5 from the NCFB. As I said, the membership of this particular committee is not done according to province in the HRP. To the best of my knowledge, because of this provision, which determines that parties with more than 10 members are entitled to membership, it sort of determines a party setup in this particular committee.
I'm going to ask a very simple question, but please bear with me. It was established in terms of Constitution of the Republic of South Africa 1993, that 200. But were those provisions that established the Joint Standing Committee on Defence, were they kept in the final Constitution? In the 96?
It's still an interim Constitution. It's part of the arrangement and it's part of the arrangement that
Oxford enforced. Because the question that I just posed is I often see this reference to the interim constitution 1993. And my understanding was the interim constitution was repealed.
Yes.
in terms of Schedule 7, laws repealed, Act 200 of 1993. And please, if we can just have a better understanding what the current state is.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Sorry, I've got to introduce myself. I'm Africa Niagara from the Legal Services Office. Just to confirm, Item 24.1 of Federal Secret of the Constitution 1996 retained a number of sections of the Income Constitution, one of them Section 228. So Federal 7 does repeal, but it says it is subject to another section and subject to Schedule 6. And then if you look at Schedule 6, Item 24, Sub 1, it clearly states that it retains 228. It says it can be amended, et cetera, et cetera, but at this point some it hasn't been, so that has been retained in the Income Constitution.
Is it an advantage or a disadvantage to the institution?
Chairperson, it's an act that is on the Statute Book of South Africa, and therefore it is like any other act that, you know, where there's a newer and version coming out to retain some of the old sections. Examples of the reason for something like that would be that there was nothing wrong with the way it was worded, but was envisaged that it might want to be changed, but not necessarily in the Constitution itself. So it is not a disadvantage. It is an act in the statute book, and therefore we must apply.
I just think it is important for all of us to be on the same page as far as this is concerned. Because for members who is very often very much part of the transition from the 1993 constitution to the 1996 constitution, etc., and all the structures of parliament, when we come in and we have a look and we say, what is the relevance? They must please understand. I thought we should actually have been brought on just that we should have been brought on par to understand what the legal framework is before we consider this, so that if it is still 1993 and it is based on party representation, then clearly that is going to complicate matters for us, because other committees the composition of other committees is different, but now we are compelled to check this, and I think this is very important. By the way, I think Advocates and Matters referred us to. I don't know where to find it, but I will find it in the rules. Thank you.
Yes, indeed. The last commission was capitalized for the final constitution, and therefore it's part of the laws of the country by incorporation in terms of the final constitution. So I think the question that the parliament should grapple with is whether this joint standing committee on defense is still relevant or not. And if the parliament finds it relevant, then parliament must see how it should function. But if parliament finds it irrelevant, then it means that parliament should then move for amendment of the constitution. Because until such time that the constitution has been amended, that provision remains applicable. And Chair, you will pardon me, it also takes me back to the waiting. For the constitution, the United States says there should be a joint standing committee on defense. That waiting perhaps is similar to what we were dealing with earlier on. In terms of the Financial Management of Parliament Act, if one looks at that act, it establishes an oversight mechanism. So it appears to me that if the Constitution, for instance, intended to establish something different, the drafters of the Constitution would have said so. That reference indicated appears to apply with similar forces over as the Financial Management of Parliament and Provincial Legislature Act is concerned, because that act establishes a a mechanism of oversight of enemy. It does not establish agent sending committee on finance, for instance. And if the drafters of the Act had intended, in my view, to establish a joint spending policy on finance, they would have said so. So maybe and I apologize if I'm taking the committee back.
Yes,
so I think the committee should also consider the naming of the joint spending committee on finance, insofar as the financial management of government and the provincial legislation is concerned.
I support your management of the I thought the issue here is the conversation along party lines. Is it helpful? Is it not helpful? If it doesn't affect Parliament going forward, then why not come up with a solution? And also, Kaula.
Thank you. I just want to ask this for my own understanding because I'm relating to some field. The current arrangement in respect of the operations of this committee is 858MA, 5MPOP, until when? And in that current arrangement, has taken consideration of what is indicated. The provisions of the 1993 Constitution 24 and with that, what is our mandate as this commission in respect of the current arrangement? That's also understanding.
Thank you. Welcome. I
see
we have been joined here. Also, Honorable Kaula, much from here, as it is the normal. The gentleman next to Honorable Lambo. Yes, yes. You're welcome. Over to you.
Okay, ma'am, I think the internal constitution provisions are in place, and that is what we are requiring at the moment, as I think it's intended. And, in other words, that determines the composition of the committee. So if we need to change that, we need to repeal the provisions of the National Constitution or change them. And that's as far as I know, can be done by Section 75 of the National Constitution. I think that's the virus confirming. But what I'm saying is that at the moment the rules are drafted in accordance with what the provisions of the National Constitution are that establish the particular committee. I think what our mandate is we need to consider the report that was referred to us. And composition is one of the issues that was addressed in that particular report, and it was addressed at the start of Parliament, the start of the fifth Parliament, when we changed the composition, and we made a smaller committee that was able to function.
And what do you want to
do? This particular issue that we just discussed, the formula and the interim.
Constitution.
Yeah. So the only thing we changed is we changed it in such a way that the rules committee determines the membership, but then still apply the formula that is applicable to this particular to this particular issue.
Thank you very, very, very much. You still have to. It's very, very complicated. From 36 to what? 50. Those are the numbers. The idea of party line still applying even to the smaller number?
Yes. According to the formula.
Oh, there is a formula.
The formula is
okay.
So the number can never be smaller than what the application of the formula allows.
Okay. Oh, then we're fine.
Let's understand the formula. Let's understand the formula that brought us to A5. So that we understand where to start from. That formula that made the committee to be A5. What is that formula?
The A5, you mean A, National Assembly, 5, NOP. I don't know who has the formula. Who knows the formula?
I know that it was him, and I worked it out. I have a document in which we worked it out, but unfortunately, I don't have that document with me at the moment. We normally work it out at the start of each conference, but as I said, I have a good thing about it. It's like a people thing. So you have to work out the numbers of party members and et cetera, et cetera. And then divide and factions, and you drop a certain number and you can increase.
Yeah, usually that is very strictly applied according to electoral outcomes, etc. And, you know, I don't think that should be an issue. I think what is just important for us is to have understood what the complexity is around this. And it is good because I think most of us probably learned a lot today about this particular joint committee. And I think this is important for us going forward. So I want to thank those who participated and presented to us. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. So the second issue that we need to look at is this delineation of tasks that I was referring to. Now, the current, to the best of my knowledge, the current NA and NCOC rules for the Select and Portfolio Committee cover the tasks that Portfolio Committee and Select Committee have to do. The current joint rules don't contain a rule which elaborates on functions and powers of the Joint Planning Commission on Defence. And I think it will help that committee if taking into account the interim constitution, we look at what they are proposing as tasks for the Joint Planning Commission on Defence, and then according to that, maybe draft a rule for them which will make it easier to cancel out the overlap between the committees and help them to focus and do their work in a specific way. If you look at Annexure 2, the HC report that was presented by the Joint Planning Committee on Defence and the Portfolio Committee, and after they had a workshop, you will see on page 322C. That's the page number of the 86. The 86 of 18 October 2012, and page number is 3323. You see that the joint plan, the tasks are set out. Now, I presume, I'm not going to do it because it's not my job. Maybe Africa Candela can just talk to us about the next committee, but I presume that the tasks of the portfolio committee will be fairly similar to that of the select committee with obviously a provincial sponsor as well. So if we can just really look at the joint planning committee, as I said, remember I said
it's 34. So it's 18 October.
Okay, so let's see the report that was adopted by the NA and then referred to JRC. JRC referred it to us because it involved a joint committee. And remember I said the idea for the joint committee was going to be almost strategic. So the first thing that they proposed is that the Joint Planning Commission on Defence should consider a report on the employment of the SANDF in fulfillment of international obligations or in defence of the country. Now that's one of the parts. All letters of employment are referred to that committee anyway. Remember letters that come from the President. There's a bit in the report also on the delay that we have with those, because in terms of the Defence Act, the committee also has the power to propose to the House the termination of a particular employment. Now that's never been used to the best of my knowledge. But one of the reasons why it hasn't been done is also because of the fact that the letters of employment often arrive very late or even after the fact. You know, instead of Parliament being notified promptly, and I think was it the Constitution 1710, maybe, Eric? I'm not relying on my legal colleagues to help me with this one, but what I'm saying is that what it boils down to is that the letters often arrive late. Now, part of this report is they propose, and that's an operational thing, that the speaker and chair doesn't write to the leader of government business, and that matter be addressed via that particular channel. The leader of government business takes it up to the presidency, and then the parliament gets informed timely about the employment of the business. But as I think, that is part of the We are of the view that the current rules do cover those issues, but the subcommittee can have a look at those issues if they want to. We think there are sufficient controls in the rules committee for if they want to close a meeting, they can do so. They are an open committee. If they want to consider confidential documents, they can if they want to. There was a concern about leaking of information out of the committee, of confidential information, but even that is covered in terms of law. I mean, we recently had protection of fake information law. We covered the issue which incorporates the security standards of confidentiality, chief documents, etc. in that particular act. So members of parliament obviously have to abide by that as well. So that issue, I think, the committee can apply to it, but we do think that it is sufficiently covered in the rules and in law at the moment. So that they, often maybe a lady feels that that committee has said, look, these are the measures that we have for that particular issue, and if they do require something further, they could maybe come up with proposals on what they require. And I think that is part of that report is concerned.
Thank you very, very much. Honourable members, the report is before us, page 323. Any comments?
I really appreciate that Marina has presented us to also make every bit of proposal. Can I just have a bit of understanding? Do you mean is what the inner gable and the interesting status, do they want us to just give them a broad strategic in principle nod before they go and draft the necessary amendments to the rules? I just need clarity of what it is that they want to direct us. The reason being that as they have elaborated on the single page, it appears that they've sort of bundled together strategic oversight for the joint committee, which is now reduced in size, proposed to be reduced in size, so it could meet more regularly, which makes good sense. And then to retain operational and budget oversight at the parliamentary health committee, NCPNA, to come. So that is the broad vision. So in principle, what is it that we should take a decision on today? Because we take note of the report. We also thank them for the presentation. Now we just need clarity on what it is that they want us to in principle decide or to refer back for the next meeting so that we understand how do we take this process forward. Because clearly, as we have now seen, this matter has been hanging sort of somewhere and it needs to be taken forward. It's a pity that we only have one of the joint chairpersons here today, but I think if he could perhaps just give us an indication of discussions that they've already had with in a chairperson, maybe it would also help us to just have a better understanding if there is general agreement on any issues that we are maybe not aware of.
Yeah, thank you, Honourable Chairperson. The issues that were grappling with my co-chairperson is the issue of oversight. Where we'll find that there are clashes in terms of the setting of or the program of two houses, even during the oversight period. So that's where our biggest problem is. But when it comes to other matters, I think meetings were still okay. In terms of the functionality of the joint standing committee. Basically, everything is small ever since the start of the formation of the state. But the biggest problem, as I'm saying, is based on the oversight in terms of the program of two houses. Thank you.
Thank you, Chef. For clarity once more, the institution has for a champion in community on disaster and also a postal community on disaster and no select community on disaster. The rationale behind having the champion in community but go on to have a postal community, as I understand that.
I think the whole idea is that the constitution compels us to keep very accurate oversight over all the executive functions. Consequently, the norm is usually between the Ministry of Defence and Military Veterans, there must be a portfolio committee that is conducting the oversight, strictly operational oversight as well as budgetary oversight. Legislation, implementation of legislation and everything in section 55 of the Constitution. So we have that. Now I don't know the composition in the NCOP because I know select committee in the NCOP have different portfolios reporting to them. I don't know if this is a purity cluster of select committees in the NCOP which covers this. But you know, so that is what I understand. But I think in this particular case, it is because of the interim constitutional provisions, etc., as well as the final constitution, just powers of the assembly, that we need to have a distinct role for each one of these committees, the joint committee, as well as in the case of the NA, obviously the portfolio committee.
There is a security in the
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. I think the problem that is faced by Honorable Kauda here is that we do have that security cluster in the NCOP, but the thing. But I understand it from the entire constitutional point of view, that the joint is covered by the interim constitution. But his concern is that the defense as a component is not part of this the justice structure as he puts it. But maybe before he is answered, I left one thing on what the Honorable Member was asking. The other problem that we're facing is on this 13 honorable members. We haven't seen it on the joint rule. If it's there, then it was the last time I checked. Oh, okay. Thank you. I'm
not. No, that's the answer.
Maybe because he didn't see it in the book yet, because there hasn't been a reprint of the book yet. I think that's a worrying misunderstanding. So I just said to him that two houses did it through the rule. I mean, you wouldn't have been able to set up your committee under 13 members if it hadn't been reprinted by the houses. But it has been a script and we're going to use you to really to need a reprint of the book
convention.
Okay. So, Ms. Honorable Kaula, concern is being addressed.
No. Not as much as that the Honourable Member has rephrased the question correctly to see as to where the content is. It has not been responded.
What is the content on the Honourable
Member? What's the message? To repeat what has just been said, Honourable Chairperson, to say we have a chance to join stand in Commission Defense. And then we're going to have a portfolio Commission Defense. And we have seen the NCOP as a security cluster. The select committee, which has a security cluster in justice, and that security cluster does not have defense. Does not have defense.
What time does
that do? If there is no difference in that class, how does that hinder the functioning of Parliament? In your view?
In my vision, it's same as maybe having it, but it's not a debate for you. It's not a debate.
The two houses have got two different mandates. Two different mandates, and oftentimes the petition becomes very strong that the two houses must be identical twins. It can't be.
Okay.
Yeah, it can't be. All right.
Now, I was going to say
on the document here to what the conclusion. Honorable William, some of us now, I think you should ask me, what is expected of us? What must happen after this report? Yeah.
Ma'am, as I said, we would just like to go ahead from, if the committee agrees that, the subcommittee, that we need, in order to bring more clarity for the Joint Planning Committee, we need to actually outline our intentions. If we can get, if subcommittee agrees on that after the presentation, then we can go and we can, in conjunction with our colleagues, draft a rule, and then bring to the committee for consideration so that we can eventually present it, because this was sent to us by the Joint Planning Commission on the 10th. I mean, it was to the JRP. Sorry. By the rules of the Joint Rules Committee. And so then we'll report back to them and say we looked at this report, we had a presentation on the matter, we discussed it, and we agreed that it would make it easier for them in terms of their functionality if we have a new joint rule for them,
We've outlined their thousand functions, and outlined their thousand functions that more clearly. And we will give you a draft rule. Okay. Thank you very much for that, because that I think it's very clear now, and I would like to suggest that we actually go ahead and give them the go-ahead.
Yeah.
Because if you look at the other joint committee, the Joint Committee on Ethics and Culture, then that's not funding. It is specifically stipulated in the joint rules. So I do believe that it's important to differentiate so that there's better clarity and better oversight. Thank you, Chair.
I need maximum participation. I'm just saying, feel you belong, feel you are with us here, make a contribution.
There's no need to believe. I'm sure.
Thank you. You got the okay. Thank you very much. We are done with this one.
Yes,
we are done with this one. Item number 7. Item number 7. Further in on the documents, we note that there is matters to be considered.
by the committee. So in, at the next meeting, we will now look at the draft rule that we spoke about now for the joint planning committee on the agenda. And then also possibly the presentation on the next report that we have of the legal issue of constitutional review committee, where the official agreed that we would invite those co-chairs as chairs as well, and also my presentation on that report.
Comments? Don't have a principal problem with it. Maybe we can start at 8:30 and conclude a little earlier for those members who still need to get their flight, etc. I just wanted to request that if the agenda is compiled, that they just like, for instance, today it was maybe understood by the members who work on it what it is that you want. Just wanted to propose that we work towards just short recommendation that we adopt a specific decision and that we work towards, and that would make it easier for us. For instance, if we look at the Constitutional Review Committee workshop of 2012 again, the legacy report, perhaps it would be important for them to make sure that they give us the summary or presentation on that in such a way that we know exactly what would be the work that flows from that legacy report. Also on scrutiny of delegated legislation. I think that would be very helpful, that the principle, I think, would have adopted.
Yes.
Yes.
Thanks very, very much. I am not present, Dan.
Thank you, Chair. Firstly, for Laura, Chair, earlier on the subcommittee, I don't know if it's recommended that the plan is for the financial management of Parliament. Also be referred to the president of the Secretary in Parliament. I just want to now need a direction. If, for instance, the Secretary of Parliament has any comments made, should the Secretary of Parliament make those comments to the committee, or how should he do it? Or to join the committee? To join the committee.
I think what we do then is first we have a deliberation as members about it. If there are any other issues that we may bring in as an additional comment or just further clarity, then we could just say that, and we could admit that together with this, could say that the Secretary of Parliament also proposed following additions or whatever. Thank you.
It brings us to the end of our meeting.
Thank you.